American League tops the National League yet again in Major League Baseball's All-Star Game 5-2 as the All-Stars that were wearing the dark pajamas defeated the team wearing the white pajamas. Oh, those uniforms were awful. The uniforms might have been awful, but the game was exciting. It was fun. And that's what it's all about. That is what it's all about. And that's what makes Major League Baseball's All-Star festivities my favorite to watch. Hopefully it's yours. Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, and I'm joined here in the First South Farm Credit Studios. It's happened again. We're going to get it out of the way now. I'm joined by Nick Diaz. He's the producer. Diehard LSU fan. Proud Catholic high grad, at least over here in Acadiana. Back home, he kind of hides it. But that's his decision.
I hide it here, too.
Well, see, you don't want to confuse people. Because we do have a Catholic high here as well, Catholic High of New Iberia. Very good program across the board in multiple sports. Diehard fans there. So if you drop, hey, I'm from Catholic, you know, I went to Catholic High, their first response to you, Mr. Diaz, is going to be, did you play for Brent Indes, the longtime football coach there that won them a state championship, took them to another? You'll have to be like, no, I went to Catholic High in Baton Rouge. And they're like, oh. So it's probably best that you don't.
I had a moment like that, actually.
Really?
So
already?
It was the week that I moved into my apartment. Okay. So the next day, the Sunday, I was watching the game in the apartment dining area where everyone can go, where there's a pool and all that stuff. And okay. I was sitting there, and my Wi-Fi hadn't come in, and so I was watching the LSU baseball game versus Tennessee. And the guy sits next to me, starts talking to me, blah, blah, blah. From Baton Rouge, went to LSU, work here at 103.7 The Game, and he's like, "Where'd you go to high school?" I was like, "Oh boy, I went to high school in Baton Rouge." He's like, "Where?" I was like, "Oh, I went to Catholic schools and stuff like that." He's like, "What high school?" I'm like, "Then I'm like, I went to Catholic High, and this is what he said. This is what he did. He went, all right, Catholic High, yeah." He just kind of grinned and just kind of wiped his face and then just was like, all right.
I like that. I like that. That's nice.
But we are matching today.
We are matching yet again today. Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Oh, man. We got a great show lined up for you today. You know, yesterday we bragged early on. We said it was going to be a tremendous show. Ended up being just that, right? What are we going to say about today? Excellent. Perfection. Can never be perfect. But we'll strive. We'll strive to be as perfect as we can be to give you a great 3 hours of sports talk. We're going to talk, obviously, Major League Baseball amateur draft wrapped up yesterday. No Tigers selected. That's a good thing. Also, LSU got a transfer. Yet another one coming in. Could be that pitching help they needed. Maybe could shore up the bullpen. We'll see. We'll talk about that. Raging Cajuns had a couple more players drafted. One they claimed, another one they didn't. We'll break that down for you as well. Of course, we'll touch on recruiting with our guy, Jarrett Rozier, the latest. Fitzgerald West, yet another LSU commitment from the Acadiana area that happened over the weekend. We'll dive into that for you, the LCA star. He's headed to Baton Rouge. Be getting a little bit of a pipeline there. We'll talk the latest with recruiting with Jarrett Rozier from the Louisiana versus All Y'all YouTube channel, as well as Tiger Details. He'll join us at 7:30. We'll talk all things LSU baseball program, football program, maybe table tennis with the Mad Dog, fresh from vacation off the boat. He'll join us for the Tigers midweek report at 8 o'clock. So we only got two guests lined up for you today. So plenty of time for you to call us on the hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. But we're going to start talking about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. 5-2 victory last night for the American League. They jumped out early. They're in the second inning. Aaron Judge for the Yankees scored on an infield single. Then Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who I am old enough to fondly remember when his father came up into the big leagues, when his father was a multiple Major League Baseball All-Star, when his father won the All-Star Game MVP. Well, his baby boy did the same thing last night. He homers in the third, and of course in Colorado, the ball sails, shoots out of the batter's box like a damn rocket. He only hit a home run 468 feet. Whoa. He homers in the third. That makes it 2-0 American League. And then he grounds out to second in the fifth, but that does score a run. In the fifth, they make it a 4-0 game. 4-0 game. National League is able to squeeze over a couple of runs, including Manny Machado, who was a late addition to the All-Star Game roster due to Ronald Acuna Jr. suffering a season-ending ACL injury for the Atlanta Braves. The Padres star, $100 million man, he scores on a pass ball, but obviously it's not enough there in the sixth. 5-2. Guerrero is named MVP, and this Major League Baseball All-Star Game had very much an international flavor to it. Ohtani makes history, becoming the first player to lead off and be the starting pitcher in an All-Star Game history. He gets the win for the American League, by the way, as well. Now, he didn't get any hits. A lot was made about him playing, you know, doing both. He was going to be hitting and pitching in this game. Let off, he was 0 for 2. Didn't get anything. But he does get the win. Does get the win for the American League, which is a big deal. And it had a very universal flair to it, I guess. Ohtani's the winning pitcher. Vlad Guerrero Jr., he's the youngest All-Star MVP ever. He's only 22. He's 22 years old. So I guess I don't feel that old that I remember when his daddy came up in the big leagues and then became a multiple All-Star. Set that tone with that third inning home run. By the way, his father, Vlad Sr., was also an All-Star Game MVP. But this is interesting. The winning pitcher is Japanese. The save goes to an Australian, and the MVP is from the Dominican Republic. Baseball's a global game. It's our pastime. It's America's pastime. Make no bones about that. But it's a global game. And it's been that way for a long time. Look, people have been talking about writing the obituary for baseball for as long as I can remember. Baseball is not only surviving, but thriving in a lot of ways. It may no longer be the big-time national sport that it was when it was the dominant national sport. It's become more of a regional sport yet again. I looked at the attendance figures. That sure did look sold out. That was a sold-out Coors Field last night for the All-Star Game, just like it was sold out for the Home Run Derby the night before. Not only do people still care about baseball, they still love baseball. I'll raise my hand. I'm one of those people as well. I'm planning on making a couple of trips to Major League Baseball ballparks. May do Houston and Texas this summer before having to get prepared for football season. Probably going to squeeze in a couple of minor league ballparks as well. Baseball is okay. It has a terrible leader in Rob Manfred, who makes poor decisions over and over again. But the sport is great. But it's also international, and I've talked about this a lot. the majority of the younger stars in the game are Latino American or immigrants from Central and South American countries. And you also have, in long standing, back with Nomo and then Ichiro, you've had Asian players come over and play the game. It's across the board, man. It's across the board. In Central and South American countries, it's soccer and baseball. Those are the two sports that dominate the culture. In some of those countries, baseball more than soccer. It is an international game. And you saw that last night. That's great, man. That's great to see the fact that this winning pitcher was from Japan. The pitcher that got the save was from Australia. And the MVP is from the Dominican Republic. That's a great thing. It's great for the game. It continues growing the game. The big growth in Major League Baseball is coming in countries outside of the United States. You still have the fan bases here that absolutely adore and love their teams. The sport has become more regional. It just has. You hear about it all the time. Oh, you know, people aren't watching the sport as much. You know, ratings are down, blah, blah, blah. But you go to ballparks, they're sold out. Last night was a great example of where Major League Baseball is at. Ton of young stars playing in the game. I mean, the amount of stars under the age of 25 and 26 years old that this game has is phenomenal. Now, Major League Baseball does an absolute poor job of promoting their brand. That they fail miserably at. The NFL, in the last 20 years to 25 years, has overtaken the national focus when it comes to pro sports because they looked to the NBA and they said, we're going to do what they do. NFL players are more recognizable than Major League Baseball players, and NFL players have to wear helmets that cover up their faces. But they know how to market their stars. Baseball struggles to market their stars, and that's why the All-Star game is so important. And I know people like to bag on All-Star games. We've talked about it here on the show before. Oh, who cares about the Pro Bowl? Who cares about NBA All-Star weekend? Who cares about Major League Baseball? And look, All-Star weekend is important, specifically for baseball, because it gives a national audience that's all tuning in because there's no other competition going on. Yeah, you have the NBA Finals to deal with. But there's no other competition. There was no NBA game last night. And everyone can tune in and watch the best players in the league. The best players that aren't Houston Astros because they decided not to go. And you get to see them all at the same time. I love the All-Star game. And I believe Major League Baseball does the best job of anyone when it comes to its All-Star festivities. Even better than the NBA All-Star game, which is a close second. Just like the NBA All-Star game, they have theirs in the middle of the season. Gives you time to pause. And it gives you time to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. go out there and crush a ball 468 feet. It gives you a chance, if you don't stay up late for West Coast games, to see Ohtani, the phenom, the cultural phenom, and you get a chance to see him actually play both hit and pitch. It's good for the game. It's good for the game. We'll talk more about the All-Star game. We'll unveil our poll question of the day. That's all coming up next. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. The American League wins yet again. 5-2 victory over the National League. Ohtani gets the win, becomes the first player in All-Star game history to lead off the game as a hitter and also be the starting pitcher. He gets the win. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., that's right, I'm old enough to remember his daddy playing and going to All-Star games and winning All-Star game MVPs, is the MVP, the youngest MVP in the history of the Major League Baseball All-Star game at the ripe old age of 22. The American League continues its recent dominance. That now makes it 8 in a row for the American League. Last time National League won the All-Star game was back in 2012, when that capped off a run where they won 3 straight. But before then, look, for as far back as I can remember, the American League has dominated the All-Star game. Dominated. The National, since 1986, the National League has only won it 7 times. That's it. That's it. 7 times. All those great Braves players that played all those years. All those great Pittsburgh Pirates players back in the day. Andy Van Slyke, Barry Bonds, Bobby Bonilla, Jay Bell. All those guys, didn't matter. All those All-Stars, didn't matter. American League has dominated the All-Star game for essentially my lifetime. Now, it used to be dominated by the National League when I was real small. But like I said, American League won in 86. That was held at the Astrodome. National League won in 87. Then the American League won 6 straight. National League won 3 straight. Then the American League wins 5 in a row. There was the infamous tie in 2002. Woof. Of course, that was the one held at Bud Selig's place. Oh, no. Miller Park. Come on. And then the American League would win 7 more in a row. National League last won in 2012 when they won 3 in a row. Oh, the senior league. Can't win the All-Star game. Next year's game will be held at Dodger Stadium, by the way, in case you were wondering. But overall, American League has won 46 times, National League 43. And they've had 2 ties in 1961 and 2002. There you go. Phillies are going to host it in 2020. How's that? I don't understand things. So the Dodgers, Dodger Stadium, there in the ravine, will host next year. Okay, that makes sense. But then we don't have a host for 2023 or 24 or 25, but the Phillies are locked up for 2026. Okay, sure thing. American League continues its dominance. I know I'm getting old when the son of a former All-Star and great baseball player, Vlad Guerrero, his son is now the All-Star Game MVP. I am slightly old, is what that's about. This does lead us to our poll question of the day, though. I love the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. I love everything about it. I love how it's set up. I love the fact that we get Home Run Derby, and they keep tweaking the Home Run Derby just like they do the other type of events like this for other All-Star games. They tweak the slam dunk contest. They tweak the three-point contest for NBA. But you get the Derby on a Monday and then the All-Star game on a Tuesday. I like that. I just love everything about it. I hated the uniforms last night, I have to be clear. They looked like pajamas. Just awful. It was like pajamas out there. It's like, what are y'all doing? Y'all wearing onesies? What's going on? It's awful. I appreciate trying to do something new. I do. I really do. Don't get me wrong. I'm not the old man get off my lawn guy. I'm really not. Even though I sometimes sound like I am, I'm just not. But those were dreadful. Dreadful. Who comes up with these things? Who signs off on these things and goes, yep, Looks like they're wearing the remnants of a Snuggie. Boom. Sounds great. Looks great. Let's make it happen.
As someone, okay, to avoid you sounding like the old man saying, get off my lawn, I'll come to your defense. As someone who didn't grow up with a Major League Baseball team or anything like that and watching the All-Star game, me watching it for, you know, and seeing the uniforms, that they were like, eh. Like, you don't have to be an old school baseball guy or an old school football guy to look at certain uniforms and go, those just aren't good.
Those are what we call awful.
Awful.
Awful. They were awful. Yes, thank you. Thank you, young person.
I have a theory on uniforms, though. I think we like the sports culture as a whole and all sports perfected uniforms for the most part between the early 70s and the late 80s, depending on what team it is. Like, at some point, your team perfected it around that time and between those two decades.
I like that.
After that, we've been just mucking it up.
Just been mucking it up, he says.
Some people perfected it, like the Bears kind of perfected theirs before the 70s, but they've kept them. Packers have kept them throughout most of their history. But for the most part, if you pretty much perfected uniforms as a whole in all sports in the 70s and 80s.
I hate the Cowboys, but they have an iconic uniform as well that they became identified with in the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. And they've tweaked it a little bit, but they have an iconic look as well. I think also a lot of times when they do the All-Star games, whether it's for Major League Baseball or NBA or whoever it might be, they overthink it. Like, they try to be avant-garde. They try to be cool. And sometimes they try too hard. Like, it comes off as you were trying to be a little too cool. There's nothing wrong with just having something that's very familiar looking to the fans. Because once again, like, if you would watch last night's game, and it was just simple old school like pinstripe uniforms that had American League written on them or National League written on them, and the guys just got to wear their hats, that would have worked so much better than what they did. But they try to do things, and they try to be inventive, and I don't knock the thought process behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I get it. Because you wanted to put your stamp on there. You want to try something new. You want to honor someone. There's a lot of thought that goes into these decisions. But I wonder if there's anyone in the process when it comes to the All-Star Game uniforms these days that go, does anyone speak up and not be the yes man? If that makes any sense. Like, it always feels like They unveil this and they're like, all right, team, what do we think? And they're around the boardroom and everyone goes, it looks great, boss. Like, no one stands up and goes, those are ugly. Like, I don't feel like that there's enough of those people at the table when it comes to these things.
And I see when people update uniforms or like try to change their uniforms in all sports, I just kind of think they hired someone. Who they hired someone who clearly doesn't watch a lot of sports. Like, my mom, I remember she watched like the Rams new uniforms, the Los Angeles Rams new uniforms this past season. And, you know, the helmets were, I guess, pretty cool, but like the style and like the thing of like their uniforms, my mom watched them on TV on like Monday Night Football, and she was like, what, it's obvious that she's as a woman, she says, it's obvious they hired like some fashionista to come in and give like, you know, some opinion about how to make things seem more colorful
and appealing to the younger demographic is always a big driving force for these decisions, right? But like the Rams, they have an iconic old school look. The old school Rams, just with the white stripe ram on the blue helmet and the old school look. And even when Eric Dickerson ran for them and was the NFL's leading rusher in the 80s, when it was that gold yellow look and blue, it still was iconic. Like, you don't have to. There's always this feeling of having to tweak the look.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a great point, the Packers. Or the Steelers or the Bears, there's a lot of franchises that, the Cowboys, They have alternate. Everyone has the alternate uniforms and the Color Rush uniforms and
everything. Color Rushes are okay.
Color Rushes are okay. But they all still are around what they've always done, right? They're still, you don't have to like overthink it. And you bring up the Rams. That's a perfect example.
Or the like, Jets. Oh, well, like the Jets had their stuff from the 60s with Joe Namath and the all whites and just the Jets. I'm like, that's such a clean look. Why would you screw that up? Why would you screw that up?
Change for change's sake. And they do that a lot with the uniforms. Or when Tampa Bay comes out and says, we've changed our logo a little bit, or like the Pirates changed briefly, and you can't even tell the difference. Or Atlanta did the same thing when they changed their uniforms. And I was like, all right.
Well, little stuff like that I don't care about. But like Tampa's uniforms I like.
I love the old school Tampa uniforms.
The old school Tampa uniforms and the ones in the 2000s that they did back this year. Those I think are cool with the grays. I kind of like those. But like for the most part, I understand tweaking like little things in the helmet. Fine. I get that. But just sometimes the best branding is consistency.
Thank you. That's you and I are on the same page. Maybe we're both really 70-year-old men.
I've been called that before.
Our poll question of the day, which pro sport has the best all-star game / weekends? Right now, 60% of you say Major League Baseball. You agree with your guy, RP3. 25% say NBA. 10% say NHL. 5% say NFL. Darren, number one Raging Cajun fan of RP3 and company, says on Twitter, they're all overrated, but if I only could choose one, it would be the NBA. On that note, without looking it up, who won the dunk contest last year? I have no idea. I don't remember. That tells you everything you need to know about the dunk contest. I remember Vince Carter winning it like in 2000. Does that count? Zach LaVine, was he in it last year?
He probably won.
So keep voting on our poll question of the day. Leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at 103.7 The Game. We got to hit a timeout. More RP3 and company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We have all heard the horror stories when it comes to home improvement projects. Over budget, things going awry, trying to do it yourself, so forth and so forth. We've all been there. We've all heard it. We've had coworkers, family members, friends tell us all about renovation projects, home projects that go sideways. Let me tell you something. Go to Lafayette Marble and Granite if you don't want to have a nightmare happen to you. They're going to make it a dream. Seriously. Chris and his team over there, they're professional. They do their work in a timely fashion. It's affordable. And they're going to give you exactly what you want. It's not going to be a compromised vision of what you want, or more importantly, fellas, a compromised vision of what your wife wants. Chris heard yours truly talk about our renovation project at the house. And we talked about how we went granite shopping, marble shopping, to find the right countertop for our bathroom vanity. And we went to multiple places. Didn't get some great service at a few of them. Didn't find the right countertop at others. And some couldn't do the right cut, the specific cut my wife had dreamed about that she sketched on paper about. Chris heard that. He wanted to have the opportunity to earn our business, and that's exactly what he did. Exactly what he did. We went out there. We found the right countertop. They did the exact same cut. They installed it in a timely fashion. They were professional. So much so that my wife can't wait to have Chris and his team at LMG handle the home renovation project for our kitchen and those countertops. Go check them out at LMGElite.com. That's LMGElite.com. Or visit their showroom in person, located on I-49 North across from Hub City Ford. LMG, they just want to have the opportunity to earn your business, and trust me, earn it, they will. Keep voting on our poll question of the day. Major League Baseball All-Star Game, is it the best? Is it the greatest of all the pro sports All-Star Games? Right now, 59% of you say yes. 27% say NBA, only 5% for NFL, 9% for NHL. Obviously, Mr. Green, a.k.a. Jamie, is out there voting, stuffing the ballot box for hockey.
I've never actually watched NHL All-Star. Is that any... I would imagine that'd be kind of interesting.
It's kind of interesting. Hockey's interesting. I enjoyed watching it in person. I've tried to watch it on television. It's easier to understand if you're in the arena, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I heard it's awesome in person.
And the I saw a Dallas Stars game a few years back. Had one of those weekends. I met up with my buddy from Oklahoma. We went to a Rangers game and went to a Dallas Stars game same weekend. That's what I do on guys' trips. We just go to sporting events.
There you go.
So, planning another one with him, actually. Happened probably early August. So, the excitement and being high up and looking down on the ice, it makes a little bit more sense to me. But trying to watch it and follow it on TV, I can't. I struggle. I didn't grow up with hockey, so it's difficult. Interesting, though, of all the professional sports, like big-time Hall of Fames, you know, you have baseball, Cooperstown, New York, right? Canton, Ohio, NFL. The Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, by the way. I've actually been there. I went when I was a kid, like 12 or 13 years old. I just never latched on. I never was able to kind of get into it. But I got friends that love hockey. It's one of those sports where I never run into anyone that likes it. I never know anyone that just likes hockey. They love hockey, right? They have the NHL package. They love it. There's no, I like it. There's none of that. It's you either love it or you don't.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
It's kind of like SEC baseball.
It's not a bad comparison because a lot of people don't understand SEC baseball. But that leads us to our next discussion here on RP3 and Company. So we talked, our poll question a day ago was it a good day for the LSU baseball team on Monday when they did have a couple players drafted, two star pitchers, Jaden Hill and Landon Marceau, gone. But they had others come back. Devin Fondo, Mikhail Hilliard made their announcements. Then we get yesterday. Gavin Dugas does not get drafted. I'm going to tell you why he didn't get drafted, by the way. Gavin Dugas did not get drafted because he told people through back channels, told teams that he wanted so much money. So don't, and if you're not going to get it, look, these guys communicate through agents and communicate through people in between with Major League Baseball teams. Gavin Dugas wasn't drafted because people knew not to bother drafting him because he was coming back to LSU. And with the draft only being 20 rounds and not 50, teams can't afford to waste a pick on someone that's not going to sign with them, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I figured happened.
When he didn't get taken on day two, you and I talked about that, and I was like, I keep hearing that he's coming back. I'd be willing to bet you, you'll never get anyone on record to say this, but I'd be willing to bet you that he let it be known, I'm going back to LSU, don't bother. It reminds me of a couple years ago when, it was Duplantis, obviously, was here from Lafayette. You had, I don't want to say the two Zachs, Watson and who was the other one?
Watson and...
the pitcher.
Zach, it's on the tip of my tongue. Ah!
We'll just say the other two Zachs. But they were draft eligible, remember? And they all came out, and basically they didn't get drafted until later in the draft because they all let it be known to Major League Baseball teams that they weren't going to leave LSU unless they got so much amount of money. So teams didn't draft them because they didn't want to pay them what Duplantis and Zach and the Zachs wanted. So they all were drafted, but they all came back to LSU because they were drafted so late. Zach Hess, thank you. They couldn't figure out what to do with him if he was a reliever or a starter, right? That's what
we couldn't figure out his last name.
I knew it was the two Zachs. But they let it be known that they wanted to be slotted. They wanted to make so much money. And then if that wasn't going to happen, then, you know, they weren't going to sign. So they weren't taken until the later rounds. Well, now you don't have those extra additional 25 rounds of the draft, right?
Right.
So I firmly believe that Dugas was like, hey, once he didn't get drafted on day two, I think he let it be known, I'm going back to LSU. And that's why we didn't see his name called.
This roster for LSU, just in their lineup.
They return the entire starting lineup from last year.
And then they add McManus and Barry.
Correct.
So this lineup.
Not to mention they add the high school kids.
True, and the high school kids. This lineup, offensively, is good enough to win in Omaha. Just if you're just going off of lineup, they're good enough to win. Yes, I still have major questions about
defense.
No, not so much fielding. I can kind of see where it's going to set into place, especially when you add Merrifield from LSUE. I can see where that could come into play. I still have questions about pitching at the end of the day.
I agree.
You got to go out and get. I know they got a transfer from Southeastern.
That's good.
Schaefer.
That's good.
I don't know how good he is. I know he had a good season at Southeastern.
You have Mikhail Hilliard coming back.
Veteran.
He's going to anchor your rotation, right? You have the guy from San Francisco that's coming in.
Right.
Who's already been a starter, so it's not like he's a true freshman. He's coming in. Can they get A.J. Labus to live up, reach his potential would be the best way to describe that, right? I have confidence in this new pitching coach to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once again, I said it earlier this week, fall camp's going to be huge for this team. Huge for this team on what's going to happen, on how they're going to develop. But I'm like you. Look, it's great that they got their entire starting lineup back. They're adding two players we know to that mix. So someone's going to not be a starter from last year's team, and that's fine. That just gives you even more depth. You have the high school recruits coming in. You mentioned you bring in Ian Merrifield from LSUE to help defensively. You bring in a pitcher from San Francisco. Now you got the Southeastern transfer, Trey Schaefer, a lefty. Can't have enough left-handed pitching, by the way. Now, he didn't pitch full-time until 2020.
So another left-handed closer, maybe?
Last season, he had a 4.95 ERA and 59 strikeouts and 40 innings pitched. So maybe he's that bridge guy to Fonda.
Perhaps.
Right?
I still feel comfortable. I need one more guy from, like, Arizona State. One of their guys.
I like that.
Or someone like that. Doesn't have to be Arizona State.
No. I don't blame you. But with the transfers they've had coming in, with the high school guys they coming in, with the new coaching staff, yesterday was yet another good day for the LSU Tigers. It was. Just was. Cajuns had a couple guys taken. We'll talk about that next. One guy they claimed, the other one, not so much. There's a reason why. We'll talk about it next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Oh, today on this glorious Wednesday edition of RP3 and Company is going to be the day that you're going to join the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It's free to join. You won't be spammed, and you'll have the opportunity to enter to win great stuff, like a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. Woo! You can have a good time there. Some good food. I've had some good times there at Half Shell Oyster House. But you can only win that $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. Go sign up today. It's free to do so. That way you can have an opportunity to score that $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. Let's talk a little bit more Major League Baseball draft. Raging Cajuns had two more players drafted yesterday. Total of four. And the one that they got excited about and got a quote from Matt Deggs about, did a press release on, was Drake Osborne, catcher. He was the Texas A&M Corpus Christi transfer, came in, lit it up for the Raging Cajuns. Batted 339 last year, 17 doubles, 3 dingers, 24 runs scored, and 24 RBIs. Earned first-team All-Sun Belt honors. He was selected in the 19th round with the 562nd pick to the New York Mets. So another Raging Cajun. And look, they've had a player drafted in the Major League Baseball amateur draft 24 out of the last 25 years. Great run there by the Raging Cajuns for a Group of Five program. But he wasn't the only guy who wore the vermilion and white last year that was actually drafted yesterday. The other one was Connor Angel. And if you remember, Connor had a lot of hype about him heading into last season. He pitched pretty well in the abbreviated shortened COVID season for Matt Deggs, but he got roughed up in a couple of outings early last year, and then he left the team, departed the team, went 0-1 with an ERA of north of 6, and then appeared in only 7 games before departing the program altogether. He was drafted as well yesterday in the 15th round with the 461st overall pick to the Tampa Bay Rays. So congratulations to them. Best of luck to both Connor Angel and Drake Osborne. That's going to do it for the first hour of RP3 and Company. Hour number 2 will be even better. That's coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Hour number 2 has arrived, and we're going to be better than ever. Woo! Appreciate you. If you're listening to us on your radio dial, or maybe you're checking us out on the free 103.7 The Game mobile app, Alexa, Google Home. Maybe you're just at a store right now. We're playing over their PA system. You're catching us that way. We appreciate you. Don't forget to check us out on the simulcast, though. Stadium. Free over-the-air sports television, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We do have a poll question of the day. In case you missed it in hour number 1, not to worry. It's still there for you to go vote on. Leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at 103.7 The Game. Which pro sport has the best all-star game / weekends? Is it Major League Baseball? Is it NBA? What about the NFL? What about the NHL? We want to hear from you. Right now, 60% of the votes going to Major League Baseball. That is the correct answer, by the way. 24% say NBA. 4% say NFL. 12% say NHL. I see the vote totals here for the hockey. Mr. Green, a.k.a. Jamie, is putting in the work. That feels very much like a Mr. Green type of initiative. Stuffing the ballot box. Type of vote total there. 12%? Really? Really? I think Mr. Green's at work. Let's get to some comments. Brad on Twitter says, baseball by far. NBA has the worst event. Slam dunk contest is so lame now. If it was horse, it would be shot. If it was a horse, it would be shot. See, that works. I wasn't ready for going to put a horse down in a pasture this morning, but Brad's bringing that to Twitter. Ton on Twitter says, well, it definitely isn't the NFL. You know what I miss about the NFL that was fun when I was a kid? Was like the old school like skills competitions part of Pro Bowl week. So you'd have Dan Marino and Joe Montana and Jim Kelly all out there doing ridiculous things with the football, like trying to hit a moving target. Like, you know, on like a golf cart, it's going across the side. You know how far you can throw it. Aaron Brooks was part of this 1 year back in the day for the New Orleans Saints. It wasn't that long ago. It's not part of it, but I remember how much fun that was because the guys, they weren't in pads, right? They were just in their jerseys and shorts, just having a good time, laughing it up, and just trying to, you know, show off was all it was. It seemed fun I wish that was part of what the NFL does for its All-Star Game festivities. I think it would be a lot more fun. I just would. Because the problem for the NFL, unlike the other three leagues, its All-Star Game happens after the season. For years, it happened after the Super Bowl. Then they switched it, and now it happens the week before the Super Bowl. So instead of having that 1 week completely off from professional football, we've now have for years, end of the you have conference championships, then the Pro Bowl, then the Super Bowl. And they keep changing the Pro Bowl venue, right? They took it away from Hawaii, and then they put it in Florida, and then they put it wherever the Super Bowl site was. They can't figure out what to do with the Pro Bowl. I'm not a Pro Bowl hater. I liked the Pro Bowl when I was a kid. Once again, I look at it probably a little bit more nostalgic than others because that gave me the opportunity to see other players that I never got to see before. Because I grew up still in the era of only having three channels. So, and PBS, so you had four. So, I always enjoyed it. It's gotten a little stale because you can't hit.
There you go.
You can't sack anyone. You know, it's like spring football in a lot of ways, right? Which is boring. I'm always bored by spring football, by the way. So, and what's the point? Right? What's the point of it all? There's nothing really on the line. I just wish they would embrace it and make it as fun as possible. Have it back in Hawaii. Pro Bowl should always be in Hawaii. Let those guys who are going to the Pro Bowl, it's a vacation. They take their families. They have a great time. They go out there. They're bench pressing on the beach. You know, they have all those types of competition. Just completely embrace the fact that it doesn't really mean anything and just have fun. That's all I want to see. Make it be fun. My favorite Pro Bowl moment of all time, though. I grew up, my childhood team is now referred to as the Washington football team. People ask me, why did you root for Washington? My old man was a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. I did it out of spite.
Oh, man.
Okay. I followed the college team he wanted me to follow. But pro, when I got to the age where I could start, you know, I would watch Monday Night Football with him and everything like that. And he loved the Cowboys, loved Tom Landry and the Cowboys and the whole nine yards, and Roger Staubach, Captain America, the whole nine yards. So I was like, I'm not rooting for the Cowboys. And I saw how mad he got about what used to be called the Redskins. And I was like, that's the team I'm rooting for. John Riggins, Joe Theismann, Dexter Manley, Darryl Green, the fun bunch wide receiving core. So that was my team. My favorite Pro Bowl moment is courtesy of the late, great Sean Taylor, who turned the Pro Bowl 1 year. He was known as one of the greatest hitting safeties of all time. So he's on special teams. And you're supposed to take it easy in the Pro Bowl, right? You're not supposed to do anything wild in the Pro Bowl. Well, the punter punts the ball. And then the punter decides he's going to jog down on special teams, on coverage. That was a mistake. My favorite Pro Bowl moment is watching Sean Taylor deplete the punter along the sidelines. It is a vicious hit. The type of hit that's not even allowed in the NFL anymore. He just comes down as if the game is as if it's the Super Bowl. The game is on the line. Sean Taylor depletes that punter right up. Boom. Just jacks him up on the sidelines. I'd like to see more of that, too. I'd like to see more hitting in football, period.
But I think you kind of just pretty much answered your kind of own question is that your favorite Pro Bowl moment was a hit.
Yes.
Which... You can't. The problem is that nobody wants to get hurt in those games, and nobody
That's
wants to get
correct.
Hurt in any, you know, all-star event at all in any sport. But football, it's built on regulated violence.
Correct.
And so it's kind of hard for it to. I mean, the skills stuff, I think they brought it back 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's in some form or fashion. You can have fun with it because, look, you cannot have – the NFL can't have its all-star game in the middle of the season. You just can't do that. No one would take part in it, first of all. And you can't do that for television revenue anyway, So when you look at it that way, the only way they can do it is after the season. Who wants to come to Hawaii? Who wants to have fun in the sun? And let's just mess around and have fun. Like, I'm okay with that. The Pro Bowl is never going to be as good as the other ones. It's just not. Because it's just not. It just isn't. Baseball is my favorite. And it always has been because they do it the baseball does a lot of things the wrong way. The All-Star, how they attack their All-Star game is done the right way. With the exception of when they did the stupid thing of, well, whichever league wins the All-Star game, the team from that league will have, that is in the World Series, will have home field advantage. That was the stupidest thing ever. I go, the guy for the Pirates has no desire to help out my Braves when it comes to the postseason. Like, he just doesn't. That was dumb. It's just dumb. They fixed that. They took that's no longer part of it. Thank God. But the way it's just constructed, the All-Star game, you have fun. The home run derby is always fun. Look, is it real pitching that they're getting on those balls that they're knocking out the yard? No. They don't have Randy Johnson out there throwing pitches. Okay, they don't. There's not a filthy CC Sabathia splitter coming your way. No. But it's fun, right? And credit Major League Baseball because they figured that out.
Chicks dig the long ball.
You come out there, a lot of them bring their kids with them, right? They just sit out on the grass. They don't even stay in the dugout. They just sit out there on the field, and they're just watching their teammates do it, and they have fun. They give each other hugs and high fives and stuff like that. It's very relaxed. You get to see the players because they don't have the helmets on, so you get to see their faces. You get to see their personalities. It's a great way to market your stars. You would think baseball would take that and just embrace it completely. They just don't. But I just love the All-Star game. Major League Baseball is the one I make sure to watch every year.
Why doesn't Major League Baseball market their stars in the, like they do with All-Star games? Like, what is the reason other than just incompetence? Is there a reason other than incompetence, or like, what is it?
Part of it's arrogance. Part of it is the problem with baseball and its leadership is that it doesn't feel like it needs to do anything because it's still baseball.
Okay.
It's one of those things. The NFL figured out along the way how to embrace marketing. They took a page out of the NBA. Look, the NBA was the first on this. Stern, as the commissioner, saw what the NBA could be. You market your stars. You market the stars, not the teams. You market the stars. Now, you already had, by that time, some of the teams already become brands themselves, Lakers, Celtics in particular. Lesser degree, Knicks. But after, you know, Magic and Larry, and then comes Michael. And when MJ comes, it's a game changer. And he marketed everything. So the best player in your league is everywhere. You saw Michael Jordan everywhere. Gatorade, McDonald's, him and Larry Bird are shooting, playing horse for a Big Mac. Everything could possibly be done. And the NBA was Stern as its leader, took that and ran with it. Ran with it. The NBA is a league of stars. It's a star-driven league. And the NFL picked up on that and said, hey, that makes sense. Market themselves. I mean, just think of all the stuff. Campbell's Chunky Soup. That became a thing like 20 years ago, strictly with NFL guys. They figured out a way. They don't do it as well. They don't execute the marketing as well as the NBA does. But the NFL does a very good job of marketing themselves, and that's why they've become more of a national sport because of that. They also fully embraced gambling behind the scenes, and then now fully out in the open. Baseball just doesn't, like, if you go to regions, and the people always make this comparison, and it's a false narrative. They always say, well, if Mike Trout walked into a place, no one would know who Mike Trout is. Well, baseball people would know. Like, Kevin Foote and I would know, if we see Mike Trout, we're going to know that's Mike Trout. But we watch baseball all the time. But the average person doesn't know who Mike Trout is. If you're in California, they know who Mike Trout is. Where the Angels play, they know who he is. Mike Trout can't walk out to anywhere and not get recognized in his market. That's where baseball's at. Now, they have dynamic players, young dynamic players. Fernando Tatis Jr. for the Padres, Ronald Acuna Jr. for the Braves. But you have a big problem, a fundamental issue in baseball where a lot of the younger players, the stars that would drive people, would bring people to the game on a national level, bring in the bystanders, so to speak, bring in the people that aren't diehard baseball people and trying to bring them into the game with them being showmen, bat flips, excessive home run celebrations, things of that nature, swag, as the kids say. Baseball tries to cripple that constantly with its rules and its unwritten rules and how it treats those types of players. Instead of embracing it and going, if they would embrace that, it would help. It would help. It would go a long way. Because then if you just embrace what they're doing, it would go a long way. And the crazy thing about baseball is they did this. After the strike in 94, they fully embraced the home run hitters, Maguire, Sosa. A lot of the steroid users or alleged steroid users. They did so. They even made like comic book imaging for like the television broadcast where they're all bulked up superhero looks. They fully embraced it. It brought baseball, it brought the general public, if you will, back to baseball. Baseball guys were still there. Baseball people were still there. But they brought all those other people back into the fold. Well, you with the fallout of that, like it just feels like they're hesitant to embrace marketing their guys again because of that. Like they it almost comes off like they're gun shy, if that makes any sense, because they fully embraced it, marketed it, look, all our big bulging superstars. And then the fallout from steroids happens, and then they're like, oh, they got egg on their face. Well, you can still embrace these guys. Look, you can still embrace it. And you got young, dynamic players. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is one of them. He's 22 years old. He's the youngest guy ever to win All-Star Game MVP. Within the next couple years, he should be one of the most recognizable guys. But they did a poll just a few years ago of recognized sports figures in the country. A big, massive, like, Gallup poll. Derek Jeter was one of the most recognized baseball players, and he'd been retired. That's a problem. They got to do better marketing their talent. The All-Star Game is a great thing. Take that and embrace it and make it further. Just do that. You'd be a lot better off if they did. We've got to take a timeout. More All-Star Game talk. More of a lot of things. We'll take your phone calls as well, too. 337-706-0111. We'd love to hear from you. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Three Games giving away a $100 Google Play card that can be used in the Google Play Store to buy apps, games, music, movies, books, and so much more. But you can only win this $100 Google Play card. And look, you can use it however you want to. We're not going to judge you. It's a judgment-free zone here on 103.7 The Game. We just want to hook you up with it. But you can only win it by becoming a member of the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. So go sign up today. So you can have a chance to score that $100 Google Play card. It's free to do so. Go make it happen. We were scheduled to touch base on something. Team USA responding last night with a dominant win over Argentina. Am I confident that this team is going to get its act together and win gold in Tokyo? I don't know. Argentina's not very good. They're 0-3 now in these practice games. I like the fact that you saw Team USA come out and they were dominant. Durant had this hustle play with on defense with about 5 minutes left to go in the second quarter that I was just like, he kept just swatting the ball away. I like the effort. I like the fact that he came out and they won in dominating fashion. But I'm going to wait and see with Team USA. I don't know if the roster is constructed properly. And I just don't know. The problem is the rest of the world is caught up in a lot of ways. Look, your MVP for this year is a foreign-born player. The best young player under the age of 25 is Luka, who's probably going to be a multiple MVP. The rest of the world, due to the Dream Team in 92, and we can talk about that when we get closer to the Olympics and the impact that's had still in the 30 years since then, changed basketball on a global scale. We were going to talk about that, but you brought up a point off the air, and if you don't mind, I'd like to continue that discussion here. We were talking about marketing, talking about baseball and how it struggles to market its stars. And you brought up something that happened to you while you were at LSU in a class about marketing. Would you, if you don't mind, retell that story?
Absolutely. So I tell that story to sports fans all the time. So I was in a class that dealt with a lot of things like media ethics, marketing, stuff like that. And we were discussing marketing for that month in class. And we were looking at commercials and trying to study, analyze, like, what's the goal? What are they trying to accomplish?
Right.
And they would play a commercial and the class would discuss. Play a commercial, class would discuss. And one of the commercials this time was a Derek Jeter commercial. Some of you listening may remember it, which Derek Jeter, he's being driven across the Brooklyn Bridge by his professional driver in a really nice car, SUV or whatever. And he tells the driver, hey, don't drive me. I'm going to get out and walk to the stadium, to Yankee Stadium or wherever. And
yeah, it'd be Yankee Stadium in the Bronx.
And so he gets out of the car, and Derek Jeter's just walking through, you know, saying hi to all the kids, all the community. Everyone's recognizing him. Everyone's walking with him. Kind of like that scene from Rocky II where he's, you know, running up the stands and all the kids follow him. It's kind of what they were going for. So at the end, they asked the class, like, what was the goal of this commercial, this advertisement? And some people raise their hand. I raised my hand because I knew who Derek Jeter was, even though I'm not like a huge baseball guy. Well, finally, after a while, people are, you know, giving their answers. But one girl raises her hand and says, well, I don't really know exactly the full context because I don't know who that is.
There it is.
And then half of the class raised their hand and said, yeah, I kind of don't really know who that is. One of them said, yeah, I figured he was a baseball player because of where he was walking to, but I don't know who that is. Derek Jeter, mm-hmm. The New York Yankees.
The captain. Yeah. And he's still one of the most recognizable baseball players for people, for common folks. That's a problem.
He was on Seinfeld. He was on episodes of Seinfeld in the 90s.
Shout out. So was Keith Hernandez. By the way, they're doing a 30 for 34 part 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets. I hate the Mets because they are a division rival,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to love that 30 for 30. I can already tell. Sidebar. Okay, now back. So how do you get that out there? They just don't. And look, part of it has to be the stars themselves. Mike Trout, who's considered to be the best player of his generation, 5-tool player. People compare him to Mickey Mantle. He also doesn't put himself out there. So there has to be part of that as well, right? Where you're not, some of these guys just want to be ball players. Like Mike Trout just wants to play baseball. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want to shill products. Well, if you don't have the player that is going to be okay branding himself, but think about it this way. Two of the most recognizable athletes on the face of the planet in the last 30 years were also two of the people that marketed themselves and had multiple endorsement deals. Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. They marketed, they had endorsement after endorsement after endorsement after endorsement. Part of it was because they were willing to do it. when you have the best player in baseball, Mike Trout, and he's reluctant to be someone who goes out there and sells things and puts himself out there, that's a problem, right? So you can't convince him otherwise. No matter how much money you throw his way, he's got a huge contract. He's going to go down as an all-time great. He's not motivated by that. So you have to find guys, personalities in baseball that would be all about that. And they have those. Bryce Harper is a personality. I don't like him, but I know people know who Bryce Harper is. I bet you my wife knows who Bryce Harper is because she sees also him marketing. He's in commercials and stuff like that. So he's someone that's embraced that. Major League Baseball has also got to figure out a better way to market their young players that have swag. A lot of those are Latino. They haven't figured out how to do that. They've struggled with marketing their Latino stars. They don't really know how to do it. And you brought up someone like Altuve. You brought up off the air that Jose Altuve should be the Steph Curry, right?
Because little boys and little girls look at Steph Curry and say, oh, he's shorter than everyone. He dribbles around. He shoots. All he does is shoot three-pointers. Oh, I can do that in my backyard. I can do that in my front yard.
Correct.
They look at Jose Altuve.
Altuve is a little guy. That he should be the inspiration for all little. There should be a whole thing out there where he should be a huge big star. Yet he's not. Part of it is accountability for the own players. Part of it is viewing habits from the sports public is so splintered now where baseball doesn't dominate the national consciousness. That's part of it as well. Okay, this is a layered problem. But a lot of it is Major League Baseball and its brain trust figuring out a better way to market their stars. Carlos Carrera, Jose Altuve, Ronald Acuna Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., these are all Latin players. Miguel Cabrera, another one. Those should be up front. Now, Miggy's at the tail end of his career, but they got to figure out a better way to market the Latino players because those players in their home countries, by the way, are treated like celebrities, like the biggest thing on the face of the planet. The biggest thing. In their home countries, they're viewed in an immense fashion. Like they're worshipped. Major League Baseball's got to figure out a way to tap into that and market those younger players to everyone across the country. We got to figure it out. We got to take a timeout. We do know. We've already figured that out. We have to take it. But when we return, we'll talk recruiting with our guy, Jarrett Rozier. That's coming up next right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We're going to take a moment here to put the Major League Baseball All-Star Game talk on pause. Also, Major League Baseball and how it markets its stars on pause. We'll come back to that discussion later on. But right now, it's time for us to bring on our first guest of today's show. It's all about recruiting. It's time to talk to the man behind the Louisiana versus All Y'all YouTube channel, the man at TigerDetails.com, and about 17 other outlets. It's time for us to talk with Jarrett Rozier.
Recruiting is 24/7, 365, and we've got you covered for the latest recruiting news involving LSU, UL, and Acadiana Prep Stars with Louisiana versus All Y'all with Jarrett Rozier on RP3 and Company.
My man works for about 18 different people, has his own websites, his own creations. He has his own t-shirt line. He's also not afraid to drink coffee when it comes to Acadiana at places that appear to be bougie to me. Someone and only Jarrett Rozier. Jared, good morning, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm enjoying my homemade latte. Not quite the same as all those days I spent at Rev downtown, but it's good to be back in my own bed.
All right, bud. I know you like high-end coffee, okay? You like the coffee that's fancy, as I call it, bougie coffee. But, bud, if I gave you a cup of just old-fashioned, like, you know, Mellow Joy, would you drink it, or would you go, no, Jarrett Rozier does not do that?
Oh, no. I mean, I'll drink any coffee. When I'm not drinking a latte, I mean, I'll just drink black coffee, anything that I make here, like throw it in the coffee maker.
Okay. All right, bud. All right. I'm just checking.
And actually, so one of the nights I was out there, I ended up staying out toward rain at a couple of friends' house that the guy, Matt Cormier, works for a community coffee. And so he and his wife gave me all kinds of hell. Farrell works downtown area. And so they gave me a hard time by going to Rev. She's like, look, next time you're in the area, just let me know. I'll sneak a nice cup of community coffee down from the office. We don't need you over there. And so it's tough to keep all my coffee folks happy because I'm all over the map.
Oh, my man. I had to give you a little help, bud. All right, bud. Is LCA going to be a pipeline to LSU? Because it sure does feel that way.
It was a pretty big get this past weekend, and they kind of hyped that whole dynamic up with Fitzgerald West now making it a second straight recruiting class. He announced his commitment Saturday afternoon. Sage Ryan, obviously, just a few months ago, signed with the Tigers and is now in Baton Rouge getting ready for his first year as a college player. And so Fitz, I mean, LSU coming in there late, the Tigers had always kind of been top of mind for him, though. That was the first visit he could remember taking as an eighth grader with some of the older guys and just kind of being a little bit awestruck by a school that he'd grown up watching in so many big games on television. And so it was kind of a cool story to chat with him, I guess, throughout the last few years, but certainly throughout the last month or so, about how that dream finally became a reality for him. And despite some great opportunities from Bama, SMU, Tulane, the Cajuns, and so on down the list, you just kind of always felt like once the Tigers got in there that he was theirs to lose. And so it'll be interesting to see how he transitions to a more full-time offensive line role. That's something that was one of the mini hang-ups at one point when Coach Owen Company offered him as a center, and he's a guy that has always loved playing the defensive side of the ball. But the more he thought about it and more he realized how much guys switch back and forth in college anyway once they're there, depending on what the best fit is and what the need is, he and Coach Reggie Williams and company talked about the fact you've just got to go where you want to be, where you're going to feel happy for 3 to 5 years, and that was always going to be LSU for him.
They also are having these ceremonies on Saturday. Typically, it's done during the week, but LCA has been kind of a bit of a trendsetter right here with having these announcements done on Saturday, and they have more of them coming up. You got Jordan Allen. His is going to be on the 17th, and then you got Braylon Green. His is going to be on the 24th. What can you tell us about this mindset of having it on Saturday? I know it probably dominates the news cycle a little bit more, doing it that way. That's probably one reason. And why are they having all these at the LCA Sports Complex in back-to-back-to-back weekends?
Yeah, they really spread these things out. They could have knocked them all out at once. And if you remember, Sage's initial commitment announcement was also the Saturday of the LSU at Auburn game. And so everyone was kind of on hold, waiting to see what's happening with Sage Ryan. Literally the LSU coaching staff was on the bus on the way from the hotel to Jordan-Hare Stadium for that game and finding out that Sage was indeed going to wear purple and gold eventually. And for me, I'm just ready to go into vacation mode, and these guys want to come out every Saturday. And if I'm around, if I'm in the state, I can't help but make the trip and come see these guys have their big moment. But it's something that has been kind of, I think, beneficial for them in terms of that news cycle aspect that you mentioned, where all eyes kind of end up on LCA on a Saturday afternoon. And I think we're looking at more of the same these next couple of weeks. Jordan has a lot of top programs nationally kind of in wait and see mode. What's going on with him? Louisville and Penn State seem like they may have been the two that are now rising to the top. Miami's been involved for a while, but he's got tons of options around the country. And then Brylan, I was chatting with last night a little bit. He looks like he'll be primarily choosing between Tulane, Washington State, and Liberty. So some prominent programs coast to coast, really, and north to south, and all eyes on that Sportsplex three straight Saturdays.
Where do you think they're going to be leaning there with Jordan and Braylan? Where do you think they're going to go?
Jordan's been tough to get a read on. He almost committed a few months back in the spring and then kind of put things on hold until we could get into the summer. It seemed like Miami and Georgia had kind of loomed really large with him. For a long time, I was just waiting for LSU to extend an offer his way, and it be a story similar to what we've seen with Fitzgerald, where LSU comes in late but was always kind of where the heart was. But that has not happened yet for Jordan. And so at this point, I do think Penn State has kind of come on strong of late, and then Louisville has really emphasized to him the opportunity to go play in a big conference and that he is their number one guy on their board in that secondary right now. And I think that probably speaks pretty well to him under the circumstances to know that he is that level of a priority. And then for Bryland, I don't know. All three of those schools have expressed offers to him that he can go play both football and baseball, which I know is big for him. He's a fantastic athlete in both sports. I keep coming back to the relationships that he's had at Tulane for a long time and the opportunity to play close to home and how much that means to some of these kids and certainly some close family dynamics for all three of these LCA guys. And with Sage a year ago, picking LSU and kind of, if I had to guess right now, 10 days out, I'm leaning toward Tulane for my prediction.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, as well as the Louisiana versus All Y'all YouTube channel. He joins us here on RP3 and Company. All right, bud, let's talk about what the Raging Cajuns did late last week. You actually interviewed the young man on one of our afternoon shows, filling in as a guest host. We appreciate you for that. And that's the Madison Prep star quarterback, three-star that committed to the Raging Cajuns. This is a big get for Billy Napier and company. When I see him play, when I look at what he brings to the table, his build, and the fact that he's a pass-first quarterback who can also run, he reminds me a lot of the starting quarterback that the Cajuns already have on campus in Levi Lewis. What can you tell us about that recruiting process, and what do you think about the fit?
Yeah, and Levi is a guy that Zion Chris and a lot of other young quarterbacks in the area have certainly looked up to. There's been a little bit of a lineage in Baton Rouge from when Lindsey Scott was tearing things up at Zachary and Levi was kind of looking up to him, and they were playing some heavily competitive district games between Scotlandville and Zachary. And then as Lindsey went off to begin his college career, Levi became kind of that next guy that the torch got passed to. And Zion is in this next group that grew up looking up to those older guys and has some similarities in his game. He has a big arm, as you mentioned, and can sling it all over the field, but very athletic guy that plays three or four sports over there at Madison Prep. And when he gets loose in the open field, he can hurt you that way too. I think a lot of people saw what I easily thought was his best game of his high school career in that state championship game against Union Parish. I asked him on 103.7 last week if he would agree, and he said, yeah, when you consider the stage and those things, he'd have to say that what he did in that game was his best game. But what stood out to me from him is I've seen him be a little bit up and down, inconsistent with some things at times where you have a great game like that and then you're a little bit off the next week sort of thing. And his efficiency converting some of those third downs and completing, I don't remember the percentage, but the majority of his passes in that game and really spreading the ball around to different receivers, I thought was just a little glimpse of what he can be on a more consistent basis once he gets to college, is with college coaching staff and focused on that one sport. So I think what you saw in that 50-0 state championship game was kind of a taste of where we could see Zion Chris ultimately continuing to develop toward in terms of a consistent dual threat quarterback, but a guy that, as you mentioned, has that big arm and can hurt you in that more traditional way first.
And it also keeps going with this trend with the Raging Cajuns. Obviously, Levi Lewis was a Mark Hudspeth recruit, but he's fully really blossomed under the tutelage of Billy Napier. You know, Chandler Fields, another in-state guy, highly touted prospect. He looks to be the heir apparent behind Levi Lewis, and now they're bringing in another guy from in-state, highly recruited quarterback prospect to be the next gun in line. It definitely does that kind of show you Billy Napier and his staff, their philosophy when it comes to recruiting here in the state?
I think you look at the quarterback development piece in general, I think is a big part of what they're doing and their ability to take some young quarterbacks that I mean, most of these guys have had some good options, but they aren't the elite, have their pick of the entire national litter sort of quarterback, but they go to the Cajuns and work with those coaches and then become really notable college quarterbacks by the end of it. Levi, I think is going to be one of the better, more consistent college quarterbacks that we see this year, and set himself up to surprise some people at that next level beyond potentially somewhere. And I think you see these younger guys recognize that and want to be a part of that. And then you mentioned the in-state component. If you have a program that's built on the quote-unquote culture and repping the state of Louisiana, the face of your organization beyond your head coach is your quarterback. And so the opportunity to find some guys close to home mm-hmm. that you can build in that way, I do think is really big for that.
All right, bud. Are we going to see – are you coming over Saturday for the LCA?
So I've got to figure out what my requirements are for the Manning Passing Academy down the bayou. But if I'm not there on Saturday, I will be back in the Sportsplex on Saturday.
My man. Are you going Friday to Manning?
I have no idea what they're expecting me to do, but I may be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I may be there just one day. I need to get more clear instructions of what our schedule is for the Tiger Details crew.
If you have his schedule, his work ethic, you would be drinking as much coffee as possible as well, bro. But keep up the great work, man. You're one of the hardest working guys in the business, and you deserve everything that comes your way, brother. Thank you so much for your time, as always. We'll talk to you next week, bud.
Appreciate you, Ray, man. Y'all have a great day.
Yeah, I mean, you have to essentially get the IV of coffee. My man's everywhere. Driving over, guest hosting on 103.7 The Game, going to LCA, signing ceremonies, commitment ceremonies, going to 7-on-7 tournaments, everywhere. Going to Manning Passing Academy. I'll be there Friday, by the way. Look out for stories and such on 103.7 The Game this coming weekend. Levi Lewis, by the way, will be at the Manning Passing Academy as a counselor this year. We've got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Check in on that poll question of the day, shall we? Let's get to some comments. Which pro sport has the best all-star game / weekends? Is it Major League Baseball? Is it NBA? Is it the NFL? Or is it NHL? As I suspected, Mr. Green, a.k.a. Jamie, he's the one that's stuffing the ballot box on the NHL. Comment here on Facebook. He's done showing his hand. It's close between MLB and NHL. I give the edge to MLB because of fan involvement. Steve on Facebook as well says, I was 9 when I saw the last great All-Star game. Yeah, I know which one he's talking about. Pete Rose took out Ray Fosse at home to score. To Pete, it just meant more. Yeah, you don't do that. But Pete Rose did. Charlie Hustle never stopped. Never stopped. Let's get to another comment on Twitter. Texan in Acadiana says Major League Baseball needs to take a page out of the Japanese Baseball League. Even the worst teams have packed stadiums. Otani is a god over there, and he pimps everything. Hell, even Matsui and Ichiro jerseys are still seen and selling products. That's about our conversation that we had about promotion when it comes to how to promote their players, and does baseball do a good job of that? 61% of you say Major League Baseball is the best when it comes to All-Star Game and weekends. 21% say NBA. 15% say NHL. That's Mr. Green stuffing the ballot box. 3% say NFL. Keep those votes coming on our poll question of the day. We got to take a timeout. When we return here on RP3 and Company, hour number 3, we'll kick it off with the Mad Dog, Ron Higgins. That's coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. 3 has arrived here on RP3 and Company. Woo. We've been talking a lot of Major League Baseball. All-Star game. Ohtani gets the win. First player in All-Star game history to be the leadoff hitter and the starting pitcher. He gets the win. An Australian gets the save. And a kid from the Dominican, whose father was an All-Star game MVP. I remember when he made it to the bigs, his father becomes the youngest player to be named All-Star Game MVP, Vlad Guerrero Jr. from the Dominican Republic. Very international flair to the baseball game, the Midsummer Classic, if you will. We talked a lot about that. We've talked a lot about Major League Baseball and marketing. Had a good conversation about that as well. We do have a poll question of the day for you to vote on. Still got time here, 1 hour left on today's show. Which pro sport does it the best? Their all-star game slash weekend, the best. Is it Major League Baseball? Is it the NHL? Is it NBA? Or is it the NFL? Leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at 1037 The Game. But right now, it's time for us to talk all things LSU. It's time for us to talk with the Mad Dog himself. It's time for us to talk to a man who's not afraid to utilize all the vouchers for free drinks on the cruise ship. It's time for the Tigers Midweek Report.
What a great Tiger.
Half the week is over, which means it's time for the Tigers Midweek Report with the editor of Tiger Rag, the Mad Dog himself, Ron Higgins.
Ron, good morning, bud. How you doing?
I'm good. Let's get something straight. I don't get vouchers for free drinks. When I walk on the ship, automatically I get them because I've been on some of the cruises. Now, I'm first of all, I'm glad to see that you were not eaten by a bear.
Thank you, bud.
It was good. That's a good job. We're going on an Alaskan cruise next July. So,
oh, you'll have a blast.
Yeah. And first of all, how was the weather? Was it cool?
Mid-50s the entire time we were there, bud.
Oh, sweet. You know, it's crazy. I covered the Saints a couple of times in lacrosse when they were in Wisconsin. And it's July, and it's like in the 50s. And you're like, and you just left. At that point, I was working in Mobile. You leave the Gulf Coast, and it's like oppressive heat. And you get up in the morning in La Crosse, Wisconsin, it's like in the 50s. You're going, God, this is great. You had to feel the same way in Alaska, like, man, this is nice.
Yeah, you know? I did. Mid fifties. The coldest it got was in the high 40s, and that's when we were by the glacier. So it was amazing. Yes, it was amazing. But
I'm glad you came back. Good.
Thank you. You too, my friend. You too. All right. So let's start off with baseball. Let's start off with the staff that Jay Johnson has put together. What are your biggest takeaways? What are your thoughts about the new baseball coaching staff at LSU?
Well, I think he's put together really two excellent recruiters. I mean, he got some good recruiters and he's got guys who can teach. That's my biggest takeaway. I think, first of all, I mean, the guy he got yesterday from Dallas Baptist, listen, if you can recruit to Dallas Baptist, you can recruit anywhere. They were a team that they lost in the Super Regionals this year, I believe. They've won before with Florida in a regional, so they have good talent. I like Jay's staff. I think, and obviously, LSU's putting together a team that talent wise really has a good shot at Omaha next year. Some of their best pitchers have come back. I mean, Fontenot and Hilliard. They'll have some other ones that'll be pretty good. I mean, and I like that they got their entire starting lineup back. So the best part about all this is that, and then you have the kid, All-American he got from Arizona, who tore it up in Team USA with Dylan Cruz. So it's LSU baseball fans have to be pretty optimistic right now about this team, what they like so far, what they see on paper. I mean, because it's pretty impressive right now. Go ahead.
I was saying, you mentioned he's put together the staff, and then he's also putting together this roster. the draft comes and goes. Dugas doesn't get drafted. Fondo returns. Hillier returns. Dugas returns. So they return their entire starting lineup. They add the All-American from Arizona. They add the Mirfield kid from LSUE, who's a great defensive player that they can put in the middle infield. And they bring in a transfer from Southeastern. That happened yesterday as well, who could probably be a middle reliever. What's the one thing that they still need to work on, in your opinion, Ron? Is it pitching? Is it finding that third starter or fourth starter?
Yes, pitching. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, Fondo could be a starter. He's good enough. He has been a starter. It's finding their rotation and getting enough pitching. I mean, Manaria said it. I mean, Jay Johnson said it. I mean, last night we had the sister from Texas, from Dallas Baptist on the recruiter. He said you can't get enough pitching. And I think that's still their deal is pitching. I like their position players. I think they, you know, when you add an All-American from Arizona and in infield, that really helps. And because, you know, Trey Morgan's still there. They have some good pieces in the infield. Some of them are kind of shaky. They need to be better. But pitching-wise – to win the World Series, to win the College World Series, you have to have pitching and pitching depth. And I think Mississippi State showed that. And when they won it, that they had pitching depth. And it still blows my mind. You'll never see this again in your lifetime, but a team that got run ruled twice in a row in the SEC tournament won the College World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's never happened before. Probably never happen again. And kudos to Mississippi State for winning. I was very, very happy they won it. Very happy for them.
Ron, when you look at the lineup, they return the entire starting lineup now from last year's team, which is great. But there's one guy that kind of stands out to me as someone who is going to have to fight to remain in that starting lineup, and that's Cade Beloso, right? Because for being a guy who came out of John Curtis with all that hype, he seemingly has regressed a little bit. Is he one of the few players that's really going to have a great fall camp if he wants to remain a starter for this team next year?
Oh, I think so. And I think he'll get better because I just think Jay Johnson improves guys offensively. And I think that he'll take a look at Cade and his swing and improve him. I just do. Cade obviously wasn't in a lot of games this year down the stretch. They pulled him for different games, and he needs to certainly bat better. It'll be interesting. I know DeGiacomo is in center field. I realize that, but I know this sounds crazy, but they were better with at the end of the year. But in some ways with Bianco in center field, because he hit better than Giovanni, and Giovanni has to avoid the hamstring stuff, which bothered him all year. I mean, it's my theory that his long hair threw him off balance the whole year, and he pulled his hamstring. That's my theory I'm sticking to. he has that 1970s, 80s, NFL wide receiver hair, and
very good.
I think that if he gets a haircut, I think it will help immensely. Really do.
We're talking with Ron Higgins, the Mad Dog himself, the editor in chief of Tiger Rag. He joins us here for the Tigers Midweek Report. All right, but let's step away from the diamond for the LSU baseball team. Let's talk a little bit about the football team. Camp's going to be right around the corner. SEC Media Days is going to be next week. What are you wanting kind of to see kind of leading up to camp and leading up to the season from LSU?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably, I want to see the development of the young wide receivers. They'll be using a lot of freshmen and a lot of them are good. Chris Hilton's had a really good, summer camp. Development of linebackers, see if the kid from Clemson can come in and play right away and play well. probably those two areas. Of course, the quarterback situation, that'll be interesting, the whole camp. They could always they can use a lot of, I guess, measurements on who's going to be the best quarterback. But every time it comes down to one thing, who gets the team in the end zone the most? That's basically it. I mean, they can say all they want. I mean, if a guy can get the team in the right play most of the time, that's a major deal. But it's who can get your team in the end zone on the scoreboard the most. But that's what all comes down to every time. Will it be, Max Johnson? Will it be, Miles Brennan? We'll see. I mean, I like both of them. I think Miles has been treated a little unfairly. He had three great games, and he got hurt. Couldn't come back. Max won two at the end of the year, got hot. Everybody thinks Max is going to win the starting job. He's a better quarterback. We'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean, they couldn't bring either of them to the SEC media day, because if he brought one without the other, it would have been look funny. So, I mean, they settled on Stingley and Austin Deculus. So it'll be nice to get back to media day, even though it'll be a bit different the way they do things because of COVID. But it'll be nice to get back there. This will be the 36th annual SEC media day. Last year was supposed to be 36. So I guess you skip a year, it's still 36. And I've been to every one of them. One of two people.
who's the other, bud? Who do you share that honor with?
Kurt McNair. He writes for an Alabama magazine. Yeah, me and Kirk were the only ones kind of left now who've been to everyone. So I went to the very, very first one, had like 60 media people there and 10 head coaches, and they all were like at separate tables in a Birmingham downtown hotel. That's when Press Day started. And it started a couple of years after what the SEC used to do. They used to have something called the Sky Riders Tour. And they used to put all these riders on a DC-3 and flying from school to school. It was the wildest thing you've ever heard of. Some of the tails off that thing. The best one is all these riders went to these places real quick. And they go in for a day and talk to the coach and the players. And they have a party that night. So I forgot where they were one night, and they come in into the hospitality room, and there's this guy who's so drunk that he's laying on the table where the food is and the beer is, and he's passed out. And they don't know who he is. So they're putting like ice on his head or whatever to try to wake him up, and they don't know what to do. So they just leave him there. They don't know who he is. So the next day they're getting on the plane, and this guy walks up, and he's the new pilot. The guy who was passed out the night before was the new pilot. They were changing. They have so many great tales, but they had the Skyriders tour before media day. But I like media day. I've seen a lot of crazy things at media day. I mean, a lot of nutty things have happened at media day. And this year will be great because it didn't happen last year. So they've had they'll have like eight new coaches, and some great new material. This is the first time that Kiffin and Mike Leach have been to media day, so that'll be great. It'll be good.
All right, bud. We'll get you out of here with one final question. One final question. All right, you ready for it?
Sure.
Whew. Nick Diaz, you know him. He used to be your producer for Tiger Rag Radio. He's been my producer now. How do you think he's doing so far?
I think he's doing excellent. Nick's consistent. You always know what you're going to get with Nick. He brings it every day. I mean, I just think – I mean, he had to replace a legend. Okay, let's face it. That's hard. I mean, but you're stepping in for like, stepping in for a legend. But, like I said, Nick knows his stuff, and he's a professional, so you hired a professional, but you had to because you had to replace a legend. And, And honestly, he held, you know, he held everything down while you were out chasing bears in Alaska and, you know, having a good time. I followed you on Facebook. A lot of great pictures.
Thank you, bud.
It was good. I don't take pictures on cruises. It's too incriminating. So
yeah. it could lend to some of those stories that you just told us from SEC.
Absolutely. You know what I mean?
But I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you got some vacation time. Enjoy SEC Media Days next week. Are you going to be available to talk to us next Wednesday from Hoover, bud?
Yeah, Wednesday is usually Nick Saban Day. He usually goes first. I don't think they started right at 8 o'clock, so I think it'll work. I'll take a look at the schedule.
Okay.
But 8 is Nick Saban Day, which means in the past, I don't know about this time, but in the past, a bunch of Alabama fans gather in the lobby behind red velvet ropes.
Yes, they do.
Watching the autograph. It's like a Mardi Gras parade when it comes through. Yeah.
Two years ago, I saw those people, and you had the two guys that were dressed up as a younger Bear Bryant and older Bear Bryant, and then you had some Auburn fans that had spray painted their dog to look like an Auburn Tiger. It was a revealing experience for me going to my first SEC Media Days 2 years ago.
It's a show now. I mean, it's an absolute show. It's a circus. I mean, like I said, this year they're not going to have as many people because of COVID. They're restricting how many credentials they give out. Usually they give out 1,000 credentials.
Yeah, yes, they do. Yeah, you're lined up inside the Galleria Mall, actually.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it started with about 60 media members and me. Well, I was one of them. And it's 1,000 now. So and all sports writers have to dress better because they're on TV. So, I mean,
that's right. No sweatpants, bud. No sweatpants.
Exactly.
Appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much, my friend.
All right, Raymond. Glad to have you back.
It's Ron Higgins, the Mad Dog himself, editor-in-chief of Tiger Ag, joining us there. Talking all things LSU. SEC Media Days is going to be next week already. Sunbelt Media Days is going to be next week as well. We'll be there broadcasting live in New Orleans a week from tomorrow. Yours truly, RP3, with RP3 and Company. And then Footnotes, back-to-back, broadcasting live from inside the Hotel Sheraton there in downtown New Orleans. We got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We have a few minutes here. I want to piggyback off of something that Ron had to say in our interview with the Mad Dog from Tiger Rag. It's about Miles Brennan. So, I think for LSU this coming season, they can't go wrong going with either Max Johnson or Miles Brennan. I don't think they can. I think either one is good enough and talented enough to be able to lead them to a 9-10 win season. That's what the expectation should be for LSU this year. They should be a 10-win team and probably a New Year's Day 6 bowl game. If not more, if not better. But the narrative that has been constructed concerning this quarterback battle, I agree with Higgins. I've never covered someone that the fan base cannot wait to throw dirt on more than Miles Brennan. It's borderline alarming. And I don't understand it. Because a lot of the same people that complained about Ja'Marr Chase opting out of the season, that complained about Terrence Marshall Jr. quote-unquote quitting on the team the week of the Alabama game, to focus on the NFL draft, to focus on their own things. Those same Tiger fans that complained about that are some of the ones that can't wait to kick Miles Brennan out the door. You're upset because a player doesn't show loyalty by not playing in the season, yet you have one. By the way, Miles Brennan could have left LSU multiple times. Multiple times. We forget that he nearly beat out Danny Etling when he was a freshman to be the starting quarterback for LSU. and that Ed Orgeron said so much in a press conference that they went with the veteran guy. They went with the transfer, Danny Etling. And this, no offense to Danny. Danny wasn't special. He was a serviceable, at that time, your typical serviceable LSU quarterback. Brennan has one of the best arms I've ever seen. You watch him throw in practice. You watch him throw in those games. Got a cannon of an arm. And here's a guy that could have transferred out then. He could have transferred out when two of his other teammates did so when Joe Burrow came into the program. Did he leave? No. He stayed. Even though he didn't earn the starting job, he stayed and wanted to learn, wanted to get better. Slinger was always a big fan of Miles Brennan. That speaks volumes to me. Slinger played and starred at LSU at that position. And he knows a thing or two about quarterbacks. If he believes in Miles Brennan, I believe in Miles Brennan. Plain and simple. And he finally gets his chance to start. He waits his turn. He's the good soldier. He does everything the right way. The good teammate. He gets his chance. An LSU fan can't wait to throw him under the bus. Can't wait to kick him out the door. I heard it right here on this station. Man, got to bench Miles Brennan. Got to get rid of him. After one game. After literally one game. He set an LSU record for passing yardage. And I keep pointing out to people, do you remember the first few games of Joe Burrow? When I saw Joe Burrow, I was in Dallas covering that game. LSU-Miami. Joe Burrow didn't have a touchdown pass in that game. And we thought in the press box, in the glorious AT&T Stadium press box, Jerry World, it's a phenomenal palace. He looks like a bigger, stronger version of Danny Etling. At least that's how the offense was at. Now, Burrow came late to LSU that summer, right? He didn't have the reps that he needed. And as the season progressed, you saw better Joe Burrow throughout that season, so much so that even before Joe Brady came, you said, wow, Joe Burrow is going to be pretty good next year too, because you saw the progression, especially towards the back half of that season. And then obviously the next year he has a record-setting year, historic year, Heisman Trophy winning season. I don't get it. As someone who graduated from LSU, I don't understand this desire by the fan base to bump Miles Brennan out of the way. And I'd also like to point out that the team was a dumpster fire early in the season. It's not Miles Brennan's fault that Bo Pelini didn't understand how to defend Mississippi State's offense. By the way, that quarterback for Mississippi State would later get benched and not even have the job after setting a new SEC record against LSU's defense. The defense got better towards the back end of the season. And I also like to point out the go-to. Well, Max Johnson, you know, he went undefeated. They don't win that Florida game if the idiot doesn't throw the cleat. Let's be real. They played well on the road, Max. Johnson played well. Kayshawn Boutte balled out. Shout out to the Barry Westgate High Star. But if Florida's dumbass player doesn't throw a shoe, Florida wins that game, and Max Johnson's not an undefeated quarterback. I know we got to hit a break. We'll continue this discussion after the break, but I'll let you go ahead and get a word in now. Explain it to me.
I don't know why, because I agree with you. I literally agreed with everything you just said, and I've told people that multiple times. What I'll say before we go to break is I just, as much as I want Miles Brennan, like in my heart, as an LSU alum, in my heart, I want Miles Brennan to be the starter. But my head, when I look at myself in the mirror and say, Nick, be honest with yourself, who is the better quarterback, and especially coming off of a 5-5 season, who's the better quarterback? I
will interject. We got three games from each guy, right?
Roughly, yeah. Two where he's a full starter, and three if you count all the other snaps. But yeah, right. Roughly.
So we roughly got three games each. Is that enough of a sample to make a determination on either one guy?
No, but
as someone who's covered the sport a long time, I can't do that. And I just can't. Remember, T.J. Finley started the majority of the games for LSU last year, and he's no longer with the program.
Well, I didn't like the way he looked personally, but that's just me.
He looked great the first game, right? He looked his best, and every game after that he regressed.
Yeah.
Okay, so but once again, the coaching staff made that decision to go to TJ over Max as well.
Now they were wrong.
They were wrong. Yes.
I have the tweet to prove it. I haven't told you this, but I have the tweets to prove it that when Max Johnson, the summer before his senior year of high school, I said, I know this is going to hurt all the Louisiana people, but TJ Finley is not as good as Max Johnson. Max Johnson is better. And that's why I was shocked when he got the start in South Carolina.
My thought process is, and I'll share it, that there's a way that they can handle this. And I think I know how Edo's going to handle it as well. And I'll reveal that coming up next after the break. Nick and I will continue our discussion. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Oh, LSU's going to play in the historic Rose Bowl for the first time when it opens the season against UCLA. You can be there for all the exciting action with 103.7 The Game's Tiger Road Trip Giveaway. Go enter in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. Go do so right now. So you can have the opportunity to score this great package. What are you going to get? Glad you asked. Round trip, chartered flight from Baton Rouge to LA. That's big time. 3 nights. Hotel accommodations, hotel to airport transfers, game day tickets, and an invite to a pregame party adjacent to the stadium, the historic venue. This Tiger Road Trip is driven by Sterling Automotive Group, Total Travel Sports, and of course, 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. And you can only win it by going to 103.7 The Game right now and entering to win in our clubhouse. So go do so. It's free to do so. Make it happen. So you can be out in L.A. rubbing elbows with the man Nick Diaz, who obviously will be there. You're big time, bud. You're big time. You got connections. You're connected. You got big time.
I will not be going, unfortunately. Although it would be cool.
All right. We started this discussion before the break. Mm-hmm. Want to continue it on. So you actually agree with me on this with the Brennan thing. It's a weird thing. I'll say it before. Whether it's Brennan or Johnson, this is a team that should be a 10-win team, 10 to 11-win team that should be competing for a New Year's Day 6 bowl game or the college football playoff. They have the talent. Now, whether or not they gel, that's a whole other story, right? And that, we won't know that until we actually see them play.
Mm-hmm.
Brennan, I feel like, and Mad Dog kind of agrees with me, Ron Higgins, I feel like they're probably going to have an open competition, but not really. O's the type of guy that's probably going to go with Brennan. But if you're LSU, you're in a great spot. You're in an absolutely phenomenal spot. Because let's say you go with Brennan, and he struggles. Guess what? You got Max Johnson. Just, boom, there you go. Brennan, we gave you the chance. You're struggling. It's not working. We got to make a move. Boom, Max Johnson, you're in there. There you go. You're good. You're still going to be a very good team. And vice versa. If Max Johnson struggles early on, you have Miles Brennan. Neither one of those guys is going to transfer out. They're not going to leave the team right before the start of the season. Orgeron's already said they're going to keep it close to the vest, so to speak. They're not going to unveil the starter until the week of the UCLA game, right? That's what he's publicly stated. So you're good either way. You're good either way. And I think the locker room responds to either guy. They may prefer one guy. There may be guys, like in any locker room you're in, they have preferences. They have guys that they click with. They gel with, so to speak. You do have a lot of young blood on that side of the football, which actually benefits Johnson because he's also young with them. So it's more of a kind of, we're doing this all together, right? This is our group. This is our time. Brennan's the older guy in the locker room. So, for me, it doesn't matter which way they go. They couldn't wait to throw dirt on Miles Brennan's career. Like, I just don't understand it. Like, you would think a guy that is loyal to the program and that is a good player, you would want to back. But they couldn't wait to get rid of him and put TJ Finley in there. And then TJ Finley didn't work out. He struggled. And then they called for Max Johnson. I'm just like, oh, okay. I was like, okay. It's weird. And not all LSU fans feel that way. There's a lot of LSU fans that respect Miles Brennan for staying with it and want to see him have a shot to be the starting quarterback. I'm not saying all fans are that way. But I've been surprised by how much, like, how much just the instinct, the knee-jerk reaction to call Miles Brennan a bum has been a little surprising.
Yeah, as an LSU, Baton Rouge native, LSU legacy myself, I am not surprised whatsoever by LSU fans doing that at all. That was typical. Very, very typical, very on-brand, something that I just have to put up with my fellow fan base my entire life. So it didn't surprise me, but I had come from a different perspective. So maybe that's just it. But as far as, look, I can't really restate all the things you've said about Miles Brennan and that I've defended him and that I think he's good enough. I think he's, well, more than good enough to lead LSU to their ultimate potential with the talent on the team.
Correct.
I think it's unfair the way he's been treated, but at the same time, let me say this, and this is a totally just unfair thing to ask you because I understand the flaw in the argument, but it's a fun conversation to have, so that's really the only reason why I'm asking you. Do you think Miles Brennan as a freshman could have done what Max Johnson did as a freshman?
Probably. The talent they had on that team? I'd say so.
Like, so 2017 Miles Brennan on that 2020 team against Florida, and he would have had that team in position to win. I don't care I'm happy LSU won, but I don't care.
If Miles Brennan didn't get hurt last year, they would have won more than five games.
I'm talking about Miles Brennan in 2017. Put that 2017 Miles Brennan.
He was a little
on.
Skinny, so I would worry. I would have hesitation there. I would worry about him. I would worry about him being able to put up with the hits, right? Because when he was a freshman, he was really skinny.
Like, yeah,
really skinny, right? So I would be a little bit worried about that if he could stay healthy that first year in 2017. But to say yeah, but once again. We're also viewing Brennan and Johnson, what they did last year. It's a COVID-impacted year. Orgeron lost the locker room early in the season with everything going on with the social issues. They had all the guys opt out.
Bad staff.
Bad staff, bad hires. It's also kind of unfair to judge Brennan and Johnson based on playing in that environment. And once again, I said it before. Max Johnson is not undefeated as an LSU starter if an idiot doesn't throw a cleat during the game.
Well, I don't care. I don't care about quarterback win record. That stuff's overrated to me.
I agree as well.
I don't care about.
It's a team game. It's a team game.
I don't. If LSU still loses that game, I'd still think Max Johnson's the better quarterback.
He played well in that game.
Yeah, I don't care about. Win
and he
or
has
loss.
Great chemistry with Kayshon Boutte.
Yeah,
which is important.
But I just, at the end of the day, I just. Say to myself, I don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback because, sure, there's loyalty involved and O likes that, and I agree with you there, but at the same time, he's coming off of a 5-5 season. And at the end of the day, he's got to look at himself in the mirror and go, do I play the guy that I want and that maybe deserves or has earned it, or do I just play the guy who's just better in practice?
And it's going to all depend on the fall camp and the new coordinators. And who they think as well, because he's going to lean on them because they're part of the Joe Brady tree, and he respects Joe Brady immensely. Let's head out to the hotline. Welcome on Doug, who's been patiently waiting. Doug, good morning to you, brother. What's on your mind, my friend? It's been a while.
Yeah, morning, bro. Hey, man, I'm glad you made it back alive, Ray. You know, welcome back,
bud. Thank you, bud.
Now, look, Ray, I'm on the Brennan bandwagon, too. I was last year. You know, but when he got hurt, I honestly, this mysterious Brennan injury, I honestly felt like he was floating the rest of the season just to get into the draft. He was claiming the injury or whatever, and I'm not saying he did, Ray, because, look, I love the guy for being loyal to LSU, and I believe he is a good quarterback, but I think that he's seen that he wasn't going to go high in the draft, possibly 5-6 rounds, and he decided to come on back. Now, I believe Max Johnson is a better quarterback. I really do. But Coach O is loyal, the same as Brennan is, you know, and I believe Brennan's going to get the start over there in California. I really do. And Finley, come on, man. Really? That dude looks like a duck when he takes off running. He's just so awkward. He's got a good arm, but he can't get you those 4 or 5 yards for a first down.
No, he's not going to run. He reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger, how he's built.
Oh, he does.
When I saw T.J. Finley play, reminded me of him.
I feel the same way that the president of Ferris Bueller fan club does, you know, that Finley is just not it, you know, and I wish him luck wherever he goes. But I feel like Max Johnson is the future of LSU, and then I wouldn't be surprised if he comes in the first game, maybe even the second game. We'll see, you know. But
I agree. I think, Doug, I appreciate the phone call. I also think this, because you're going to have a normal schedule, right? Last year was just all SEC. So you're going to have a normal schedule this year. I'm telling you, both quarterbacks are going to get ton of reps in those non-conference games. That's going to happen. They're going to make sure that the other guy is sharp. They didn't have that benefit last year because it was an all SEC schedule. And I also think, once again, and this is not a knock on Max, because you saw he was very good. They both were very good. But the team was different at the end of the season than it was early in the season. And it had nothing to do with the quarterback play. You had younger guys at the end of the season step up in leadership roles because a lot of the vets on that team did not provide the leadership needed. I'm talking about guys like Kayshon Boutte, who LSU was like, okay, well, Terrace Marshall Jr. is opting out the week of the Alabama game. Boutte takes over. He just takes over the wide receiver spot and has a record-breaking season and a record-breaking game during that down stretch. And that team came together at the end of the season. I feel like we overvalue a little bit that Max was the quarterback during that time, because obviously he was part of that, but also Boutte stepped up in a big way. Guys on the defensive side of the ball started playing a little bit better. There was more accountability. O got the locker room a little bit back, and they made it a priority not to end with a losing record. Great things can come out of being desperate. And that team was desperate towards the end of the last season, Nick. They weren't desperate in the beginning. They played awful. They played lethargic. They played like they didn't want to be there. So, once again, I personally can't jump to the conclusion that either one is the better guy. Do I think either one is as good as Walker Howard? No. So, I will say that. That kid's the real deal.
I haven't seen him in person. Hopefully I will.
I'm going to make sure you get to see him in person.
Please do, actually, because I'm looking forward to that.
So, you know, Max, even if Max wins out the job, there's going to be people breathing down his neck. Once again, that's a great problem to have if you're LSU. You want to have the log jam at quarterback. You want it to be a better version of what it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, when you had Rohan Davey and, Josh Booty and Craig Knoll. Shout out to Craig Knoll. Good guy. When you had that log jam of guys that ended up having to go elsewhere. By the way, Rohan Davey, wildly underrated as a quarterback for LSU.
People love Rohan. People love him.
They love him. But they went through a phase where he kind of, people, I was like, dude, Rohan Davey.
They did?
Yeah.
People went through a phase?
People go through phases all the time.
Well, I don't remember
I'm sure you went through some type of phase where you...
I wasn't anti-Rohan Davey phase.
Dressed like a member of a boy band. I'm sure there's photographic evidence of this.
There's zero, actually. I've pretty much I've dressed the same since I was about 13 for the most part.
Are you telling me there's no embarrassing photos of Nick Diaz anywhere? If I communicated with Papa and Mama Diaz, you're telling me there's no embarrassing photos of you growing up as a child?
Embarrassing? Well, like age appropriate. Like, depends. Like as a 3-year-old.
Anything. I'm not talking about 3. That doesn't count. Okay. I'm talking about, you know, middle school on the way through. There's no photos that you would go, oh man, please don't show that.
I mean, I'm not very photogenic, so I don't know. There's just some photos.
I feel like this is a challenge.
There's All right.
I feel like I
mean, there's no photos of me, like, doing something stupid or looking stupid. There's just some photos where, like, I look just really ugly in that photo versus some photos, I guess I look okay.
We got to take a timeout. We'll wrap up today's show. Get you set up for Footnotes with Kevin Foot. That's all coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Oh, I want to take a moment to thank our guest, Mad Dog Ron Higgins from Tiger Rag, Jarrett Rozier from Louisiana versus All Y'all YouTube channel, talking LSU, talking recruiting today. I also want to thank all the people that called today's show and voted on our poll question of the day, which was, which pro sport has the best all-star games / weekends? Final tally, 66% of you said Major League Baseball, 18% say NBA, 14% say NHL, and only 2% for the NFL. Thank you for all who voted on the poll question of the day. Whew, good show today, bud. You said you didn't have any embarrassing photos, but yet Mama Diaz has chimed in with a text of a photo already.
Well, it literally
took 5 minutes.
Well, it wasn't really embarrassing. See, it was just me line dancing at a church fair with my classmates. A third grade.
Line dancing, you say?
Line dancing.
Ooh.
Down, down, do your thing, do your thing. Everybody clap your hands.
Oh, man. Good show today, bud. For the producer, Nick Diaz, line dancing extraordinaire. I'm Raymond Parks III, better known as RP3. We'll do it all again tomorrow from 6 to 9. But until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. Footnotes with Kevin Foot is up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.